everyone, and welcome back to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm IndyStar Colts insider Jim Aiello, and I am joined, as always, by fellow insider and co-host Joel A. Erickson. Joel, we're on Thanksgiving week, so it's kind of a, it's not a short week for us or for the Colts, but it's kind of a weird truncated short week. They have like Thursday off, and I guess the best thing you can say about that is they don't need a ton of new preparation for the team they're playing because they played them 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's they shuffled things around and kind of turned off days earlier in the week into not off days and allowed people to have Thanksgiving. It's weird. It's really weird playing a team this close back to back. And I wonder a little bit, no one really said this when we asked them about it, but I wonder if there's like an element of maybe we actually get to see what the Titans and Colts would do to play each other this time, because the first time it was on a short week. And so they don't have as much. So maybe you get a little bit more of a game planning this week, maybe. The coaches always poo-poo that idea, but I think they do that because they don't want the other team to think, oh, they're going to come up with something freaky.
That's, yeah, for sure. I think that's, I'm interested to see how this game flow goes. We can actually talk about, like, if you want to look at the last game, you could be like, well, they blocked a punt and that was a touchdown, and the punter had a 17-yard punt that positioned the Colts to score. Like, maybe the game wasn't as, like, disparate as 34-17, like it showed. Like, maybe it was a lot closer game than people, you know, than you think. You could definitely paint the picture that way if you want to, but we'll get into that. We'll get into kind of what the second Titans Colts matchup, one, what it means, and two, what the differences are. Injuries are going to be a big part of that, those talking points. Joel wrote a story I think we've all been wanting to read and see, I got to say. Like, and I think, and by we, I mean people who cover the Colts, Colts fans. I think this was kind of like everybody in Indianapolis is like, why isn't this team with Philip Rivers, who's a lot of fun, on primetime more often? And this is a good team. So why aren't they on primetime more often? Joel kind of dig into that a little bit. And I wanted, you know, I'm excited to hear what he found and what he had to say. And then for our, you know, our non-sports topic, we're going to talk about, I won't go too curmudgeon-y on Thanksgiving, I promise, except for the fact that I'm going to whine quite a bit about the Thanksgiving slate of football games because they're bad.
That's fine. I think that's totally warranted this year, and especially in a year when I think everybody needs like good games on more than ever.
Yeah, it's crap. It's a crap Cowboys game. It's a crap Lions game, and it's like I'm going to guess a severely limited Ravens team against the Steelers. So I'm not that excited about any of it, but we'll get back into that in a little bit. But let's start with the matchup, Titans-Colts. Like you said, I guess we can get into the significance of it first. This is, I mean, we said it in the podcast after the game. You know, that if you're having a good season, most of the time every next game is your biggest game. This is the biggest game of the season for the Colts because it's like we talked about the trick. Like, it gets really tricky in the wild card if you end up having to play for the wild card and don't win this division because you've already lost to the Browns. You've already lost to the Ravens, and you're going to play the Raiders. You don't want to put like all your marbles on that game. So winning this game this week gives them the tiebreaker edge and puts them a game ahead, essentially puts them two games ahead of the Titans in the division race. Hard to have higher stakes than that.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to have them this early. I think when the schedule makers put this together, I think they were thinking that at the end of the season, you want to have Houston versus Tennessee, because they thought that might be for the division. You know what I mean? Like, that's the season finale. Right. Well, the Colts are playing the Jaguars. But it turns out the AFC South, it really might be decided on Sunday. I mean, it's possible that it's not, but it's really possible that it's decided on Sunday.
Yeah, I kind of think it is, because I think the Colts schedule, like, you and I have been through this a little bit, but I think even if you give them the Jaguars, say they win against Tennessee on Sunday, that's 8. You give them the Jaguars, that's 9. You split against Houston, that's 10. I think with 10, with a win against, like with 2 wins against the Titans, you win the division. Because I don't think Tennessee is getting to 11 wins, probably. And so that's where I think it makes the whole rest of the schedule a lot less pressure on getting those wins, at least in terms of winning the division. Seeding is a different thing. But you get a lot less pressure if you just win this game Sunday and you take effectively a 2-game lead over the Titans. And then, yeah, I've been saying this on the podcast 100 times. I saw what they did. I watched the highlights or a lot of the game against the Patriots. Houston's going to be feisty. like I Patriots aren't a good team overall, but they won that game, the Texans, and Deshaun Watson's quietly having a very, very, very good season. He's making some throws. He made some throws on Sunday that I was like, oh God, I kind of forgot about that he can do all this stuff. So you can't.
Well, just and you're gonna get the first time you're gonna get Houston on a 10-day break too. Which goes into what you're saying later, but they play the early game tomorrow and then they get to just sit and wait while everything else happens. Man, I did not realize Watson's numbers were as good as they are. You made me go look.
Oh man, he is. And again, there was one drive where he made like three throws.
9% completions, yeah. 8.5 yards per attempt, 20 touchdowns, 5 picks. Those are insane numbers.
He's having an MVP caliber season. It's just that his team's got 3 wins, so he's not going to be in the conversation.
It's just that the defense is terrible.
Right.
Also, they seem to have trouble scoring points.
Right.
They've only been in the 30s twice. We're skipping ahead. Anyway, you freaked me out with this, with how well he's playing.
He is playing well. Again, you can lose to that guy. You can lose to that guy twice. He's that good. But again, so you can't count that as a sweep for the Colts just because the Texans are 3-7. You just can't.
Right. No, I think that's true. I mean, that's huge.
I was actually, it's funny enough, I was listening to the Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, just because he was talking about some cold stuff, really good stuff there. If people haven't checked it out, you should, because he talked about Darius Leonard and some really good things there. But one of the things he said was that, you know, you kind of hear this is old cliche, when division opponents meet, you throw the records out. But he actually said that, you throw the records out. And he was like, I remember, I think it was 2007. He goes, the Packers went 13-3, and they lost twice to the Bears, who were a 5-win team. So it's just one of those things.
True?
That's what he said. Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, just look at, like, as far as how dangerous the Texans are, they almost beat the Titans in mid-October. It's 42-36. I mean, Tennessee's defense is bad. The Colts isn't. But yeah, no, that shows you what can happen and where it can go.
They not only lost to the Bears twice, they lost 27-20, and they lost 35-7. I'm going to try to tell you what that Bears team is. In 2007, they were a 7-9 team. So not as bad as that, but it would have been a 5-win team.
That's wild.
Haven't played the Packers twice. So yeah, Bears.
Anyway,
the point is, yeah, you could be a set, which again, I think that's exactly where these two teams are trending. I think you're trending to a double digit win season for the Colts. And I think you're trending to a 6-7 win season for the Texans. Texans could absolutely beat the Colts twice. I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves on this. You're right, but it is.
Well, if the Texans beat the Colts twice, I don't know if the Colts are heading for a double-digit win season.
That's a fair point. Well, I'm just saying it could happen. It could happen.
But
well, yeah, they'd have to. Yeah, Roger, you're right. They'd have to beat the Raiders, the Jaguars, and they'd have to beat the Raiders. Which do you have a read Steelers. On the Raiders? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, the Steelers. Do you have any feel on the Raiders at this point?
They're great. They're good offense, bad defense.
Okay, I feel like
the back half of the Colts schedule, with the exception of Pittsburgh, is basically the same, like, overarching principle every time. Good offense, bad defense.
I thought they played Mahomes okay.
Yeah, that's fine. That's a division game. Like,
okay, that's fair.
I think they're near the bottom in DVOA.
Okay. Yeah, they are. They definitely are. That's probably what it's going to be. That's going to be another one of those, like,
they also can't rush the passer, which if people haven't figured this out now, I've been saying it for weeks now, but if you can't rush the Colts, the Colts offense is going to have a good day.
It's funny. You know what? I keep comparing to different teams, but like it's the national game every week. It seems like you watch Tom Brady. It's very simple. If you can get pressure on Tom Brady, you're going to kill him. If you can't get pressure on Tom Brady, he's going to kill you. And that's almost, I think it's not quite as high and low with Phillip Rivers, but that's pretty much where it's at.
Yeah, the Raiders are 24th in defensive DVOA and 7th in offensive DVOA. I mean, that's
– they show up some games and then not others. It's very weird.
It's the same game as the one they're playing this week, where the Titans are 3rd in offensive DVOA and 26th in defensive. Bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
The Titans' schedule of late, by the way, I know people have kind of talked about the Colts' schedule and how tough it is. They haven't played a tougher stretch than, at least offensively. The Titans have been, it's insane. They've played in order, you throw out the Bengals game, they played the Steelers, the Bears, the Colts, and the Ravens. Those are 4 or 5 of the best defenses in football.
Yeah, no, it's what, like, well, I think I said this at one point. The Titans and the Colts are playing like mirror schedules. Not maybe not in terms of like the breakdowns
Right.
in defense, but they both started out getting to beat up on some teams, and then the things got worse. I was just pausing because I realized that Titans outside linebackers coach is talking right now. The injuries is a big one. I mean, Jayon Brown is a huge injury.
Jayon Brown is a huge injury for them.
That's that linebacker. He was there the first game. Got hurt last week against Baltimore. I think he's leading them in tackles, maybe.
I think that's right.
I'm going to look right now.
They're
Yes.
also
Jayon Brown was leading them in tackles. He had eight passes broken up. He had a fumble forced. He had a sack.
because
And then.
they're Darius Leonard.
Yeah, and they replaced him with Will Compton,
Not their Darius Leonard.
who is a journeyman.
Yeah, so Will Compton's been around for a while, I feel like.
He's been around.
I'm gonna
He's a
say three
journeyman.
teams. You're looking up.
He's a level linebacker. So, like, you know. There's some issues there in terms of Jayon Brown. They also are now down to their third left tackle.
Correct. They have lost. Wow, I lost the name of this. I got so excited to make my little joke, Joel, about the backup tackle that I forgot the name of the actual starting Taylor Lewan. They lost Taylor Lewan. I got it. And then, yeah, I was gonna. If you guys don't know who the backup tackle is for the Titans, now I feel bad. I set it up too much. His name is it Tyson? I can't. I call him Tyson Brero because it's way easier to remember.
Jim can't say Thompson Tyson Brilo.
Sombrilo. I think Tyson Brero is
So
way better.
he just calls him Tyson Brero, which sounds like I don't know, that sounds like some like fake name in a movie.
I was just gonna say, I'm gonna go every time I talk about him, I'm gonna go like full Burt Reynolds, like Celebrity Jeopardy. It's like
Yeah,
funny.
there you go.
Yeah, it's a funny guy. Yeah, anyway, so
But
it's
funny name, sounds like a hat.
but
But
he's
he's
out.
down.
Yeah, so they're down to their third left tackle. So this, like again, Colts fans, try to picture this in your mind here. Say you lose Anthony Costanzo, and then you lose LaRaven Clark. You're starting Chaz Green at left tackle. Wrap your mind around that. That's kind of where the Titans are at right now.
And I think it's actually a little bit worse than that.
Is it?
For this reason, Chaz Green has actually started football games in the NFL.
Yeah, but not good ones.
And unless I'm mistaken, I think David Questenberry is going to be the guy for the Titans this week. He's a 30-year-old. He's been around a long time. Beat cancer. He actually caught a touchdown pass against the Colts in the first game last year.
That's where I remember that name from. He caught a touchdown pass last year. Yes.
Yeah, which is weird.
You love fat guy touchdowns.
Well, and that one was even better because it was like, you know, he'd beaten cancer.
Yeah, for sure.
But he's only played in 12 games in his NFL career. He's never started a game.
It's all true.
And so if he goes and says, like, it's either him or their rookie, it's either him or their rookie first round pick, Isaiah Wilson. And I don't know if anyone's been paying attention, but that he's had just the worst rookie season. Just an awful rookie season.
It gets worse for Quisenberry, by the way. It's not only six, the 12 games, that kind of makes it sound like more than it is. He's played 68 offensive snaps total.
Yeah. No,
Total.
it's so
So.
they're way down. Although I'm seeing stuff now. Isaiah Wilson, I don't think has even made his debut yet.
Oh. Well,
Isaiah, their first,
that would be a good time.
the Titans' first round pick has not played at all this season, despite the fact that they lost Taylor Lewan and now that they've lost Tyson Brilo.
Sorry, I had a little cough there. Go ahead, continue.
he, he's so their tackle situation is bad. And I think if you're paying attention in the first game, the difference in the first game was the pass rush got to Ryan Tannehill, and that was it. That was it for the Titans offense. It didn't even really matter that Derrick Henry had a good game because the passing game got so beat down. And I think that's an important thing to remember this week is like their left tackle situation is even worse than it was the first time they played them. Justin Houston, Kamoko Ture, these guys rushing off the edge, they've got a mark this week. And they also have some injuries on the interior with Roger Saffold and Ben Jones. I don't know if they're going to play or not, but
I think Saffold was out. I don't know. I think Ben Jones was playing, but I can't remember where. I don't know. We have to pay attention to where
they're both banged up, though. Neither of them are at full strength. The Titans line is pretty far down now.
Yeah, it's they're so super beat up.
This game comes down to, I think, if you put pressure on Tannehill, I think he sort of had a bounce-back game on Sunday against the Ravens in the win.
He had a bounce-back half. Like, it felt like that second half, like the last three quarters against the Colts and the first two quarters against the Ravens, he was just in this funk, and he was getting beat up a lot and pressure. And from what I didn't get a chance to watch the whole game, but from what I understood, they kind of changed a little bit what they were doing, a little bit less, like, play-action deep shots and maybe let him get out with his legs a little bit more. And threw a little bit shorter, some shorter stuff. Again, I didn't get a chance to watch much of that second half, but
well,
he had a very good
second half. I would expect them, like, I'll be shocked if they don't do this. I would expect that all those rollouts and misdirection and all that stuff that we saw the last time they played on the first drive, I bet they do that the whole game because the Packers did that with some success. Teams just do that. Like teams are so worried about the Colts pass rush, they don't really let their guys just sit in the pocket. They just don't do it.
I think they'll move him around a lot. I think they should let him run. I do think that the play action game is going to be dangerous for two reasons. One, the Colts actually played a great play action defense against the Titans last week or 2 weeks ago, I should say. Very disciplined. Didn't let the run. Like, I actually got to think that's why they gave up some of the stuff they gave up to Derrick Henry is because they were being on guard about not getting beat over the top on play action. And I think that was probably the right decision if you had to trade one for the other. I had two reasons, and now I can't remember what the other one was. Damn.
This is happening to you a lot lately.
My brain, man. I turned 32, and now it's just gone. It's all gone. I don't know what happened. God. This is embarrassing.
This happened to you in the middle of a question to Darius Leonard the other day.
I know.
On the podcast.
I got it. Yeah, it was. You guys, now that you're bringing it up, it is. And again, I don't mind saying it was one of the more embarrassing moments of my journalism career because you're asking these questions in front of everybody, and I asked a question about Julian Blackman to Darius Leonard, and it was and he gave a fantastic answer, and I got so excited about the answer, I was like, I got a great follow up question for him. To this day, I don't remember what it was. What I will say is that Darius kept going a little longer than I thought he was going to go on the answer. He kind of like doubled back on defensive rookie of the year stuff. And by the time he was done, I had totally forgotten what I was going to say. And so I started to ask a question, lost it, and then got laughed at by both Darius Leonard and every other Colts reporter on the call. So it was great. It's great.
the worst part is that's the one time that we're all in the same room asking questions. So like you could actually hear the laughter as opposed to like when it's on mute.
Yeah. I've had moments like this before. I don't know if you have, like, I remember they're IndyCar fans listening, and I'm sure you have moments like this too in your journalism career where I asked, it was Will
Power. Jim, this never happens to me.
This never happens to you? You never had a bad question? I remember he came
off. I have bad questions. I don't have questions that just never finish.
Oh no, this was a different one. This was like, he came off he was qualifying for the 500. It's like the first day of qualifying. He comes off and he's in line of asking questions, and he gets to me. I asked my question. I have no idea what garbled nonsense came out of my mouth. But he looked at me and goes, what was the question? And I go, I don't know. It was a terrible question. I'm very sorry. And he started laughing. He's like, don't worry about it. At this point, I had known Will for a while, so it wasn't that big a deal. But like every once in a while, apparently, maybe I'm just like, yeah, I think I just kind of get in my own head sometimes on some of this stuff.
Your brain moves too fast for your own mouth.
What ends up happening. So where were we talking about the Titans? I think we were talking about,
I don't know, but this has been a fun segue.
Oh, what a great detour we've taken. Just embarrassing Jim journalism stories. This is great. This will be in the biography, the book that I write later in my life.
Just the, we, were like, cruising, we, were, We were cruising along on Titans Drive, and I saw a sign for Embarrassing Jim, and I took it.
It was smart. It was a smart detour. I think everyone benefited from it. I want to, yeah, Tannehill, I guess, is the get him out of the pocket. I think is 100% what you were going to, is like the right thing, especially now because they don't have a starting left tackle at all to deal with and to work with. And so I definitely think that they're going to be, like you said, they're going to be very, very concerned about getting him out of the pocket, getting, avoiding the pressure. I mean, Justin Houston has to be licking his chops right now, I would imagine.
I kind of wonder if, and I don't know what they did the first time, but I kind of wonder if you, Tennessee doesn't scare me very much with their running backs. I mean, Henry scares me as a receiver on screens.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really scare me. They don't really, I don't feel like they throw it to him much on like checkdowns in the flat.
They don't. There's not a lot of splitting them out. There's not a lot of that kind of stuff.
And so I wonder if maybe you, in anticipation of Tannehill moving around, if you give Darius Leonard like an alert or something.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I thought of my other thing. I thought of it, guys. We're back. What I was going to say was because of the lack of left tackle presence, do you really want to run a lot of play action? Because those tend to be long developing plays.
No, I mean, you don't, but.
And that's their offense. I mean, it's
the Titans.
Yeah. So my question is, do you give up what you do, or do you try to protect Tannehill and your left tackle by not running as much play action?
I think it's most likely that we see chips and help and all kinds of stuff over on that side of the field, but there's only so much you can do of that. The Titans are just at a disadvantage this week. They got Baltimore last week without Calais Campbell and without Brandon Williams. That's a huge deal.
Right.
The Colts, as far as we know, don't really have that. I mean, there's a chance they're missing DeNico Autry, but that's not I know Autry leads the team in sacks, but when I think of the two like pass rushers that give teams the most problems, it's probably I think they care most about DeForest Buckner, and I think Houston is probably second.
Yeah. I know Justin Houston hasn't been racking up the sacks, got one last week, but I still think he's the number two.
Well, he had in the stretch where he didn't have sacks, there was like there was the play he murdered Tannehill on.
Yep. that's exactly what happened too, by the way.
There were a couple plays against Cleveland that he was the guy that forced the errant throw.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield. I think that happened against, he's been close. Like there's been a lot of like close, but no cigars from him. So I think the sacks are going to start kind of going his way a little bit. I think DeNico Autry is he's exactly the kind of like talented player who the moment you take defense's attention away from him.
Yeah.
Like, oh, now we have a real problem.
I actually think that's exactly, I think this could be one of those games where you think Justin Houston's going to have a bunch of sacks because the left tackle's out, or DeForest Buckner is because of the offensive line. And because the offensive line is so concentrated on those two, you might end up seeing a guy like Tyquan Lewis with like 2.5 sacks in one game. You know what I mean? Or a guy, like right. You said, DeNico Autry, or someone just benefits from a depleted Titans offensive line that's doing its best to stop the best pass rushers on the Colts, and somebody else ends up benefiting with like 2 or 3 sacks.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Houston, by the way, I want to mention, like, I know people are 4.5 sacks. He's technically down from last year because he had 11 last year, but he's got, like, some of the numbers he's putting up aren't, like, that far off. He's got 6 QB hurries. He had 9 last year. He's got 14 pressures. He had 28 last year, so he's slightly off the pace. But you're not seeing a wildly different Justin Houston, I don't think.
No. I think part of it is just that teams are much less likely, and this is something that interests me a little bit just in general about the way the Colts defense's numbers look. I think we've seen since, and Justin Houston actually said this when I think you asked him about it. I think one of the things we've seen this season is that every single team, including the Green Bay Packers, comes in really worried about that pass rush.
Yeah.
The Packers do some rollout stuff, but not really to the level of the way they did it on Sunday. Not where, like, it felt early on, like every time they threw the ball, Rodgers was bootlegging somewhere. And this has been going on all season. People are really worried about just standing in the pocket against the Colts. And so I think that's hurting the sack numbers a little bit because quarterbacks are constantly moving.
Yep.
They really have, now that Ture's back maybe, but the Colts linemen are not really like super fast guys to chase outside. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like Houston's a power rusher, Autry's a power rusher.
Yeah, Tyquan's not super fast.
Like really, DeForest Buckner's really good at chasing outside. He can disengage from three people.
I'd say Buckner and Ture were probably your best at chasing down guys. Credit to Grover for doing it a few times this year, but he's not going to be your best.
Honestly, the chase stuff with Buckner is
oh, it's phenomenal. He did it again last week. He chased down.
Well, Rodgers. He got the fumble.
Yeah. Oh, that too. But no. But he actually chased down on a scramble. He just dove at the legs and took out Rodgers. He's incredible.
Yeah. Like, the hustle is just.
You don't see that, honestly. Like I don't want to like name. I don't know. I guess I don't say I don't want to. I just don't think you see that with superstar players all the time. Like I don't think you see that level of hustle sometimes with those guys. And you get it every down with him, which is crazy because he plays 90%.
And one of the other things about it is like he does have some physical characteristics. He's not built like most three techniques, so it's a little bit. I think he's faster and longer and all that stuff, and it helps. But it's really impressive when you watch it week in and week out, and he's constantly making plays sideline to sideline. Like,
yeah,
he could very easily play defensive end, I think.
Oh, for sure. In the right scheme. Actually, he could play in this scheme, honestly. It would be fine. Like, I don't know if he would be – it wouldn't be the best use of his talents, but he'd be fine at it. Yeah, he's kind of like a JPP. Is that maybe more kind of like
JPP. I'm thinking he's more like
– Julius?
Julius Peppers.
Yeah. Yeah, that maybe a little bit more in my comparison.
The length and the movement skills and
– yeah. I'd say he could make more money doing that, but he's doing fine in that regard.
yeah. I don't think he's doing any budget Christmas shopping this year.
Correct. He's doing just fine on that. I heard something interesting. I wanted to ask you your opinion. I heard something interesting. Try to listen to other football podcasts, and I think I was telling you before we started recording. I was listening to Amina Kimes, who I respect a great deal as a national football reporter, and she had Robert Mays on. Talking about the Colts, and they're talking about, he said kind of she asked about the weaknesses of the Colts. Like, where would you attack the Colts? And he said, outside corners are where they're like the least talented, which is probably fair. Given, you know, talking about the safeties, linebackers, how good they are everywhere else. But one of the things that he said, I thought he said, was interesting. It's like something you almost can't plan for. You have to have the right personnel for it. He said the way to beat the Colts is not what the Titans do, is that you have to have an off script quarterback, a guy who can win off script. Aaron Rodgers being the best example, probably over the last 15 years. Patrick Mahomes being, you know, the more recent example. But guys who can create after a play breaks down. Because what he was saying was the Colts sit back in their zones, play Tampa 2 more than anybody else, cover 3, all those things, and they're doing it so well, and they're so disciplined at taking away those initial routes, and because they understand the concepts, and they're, like I said, they know what they're looking for. But if you can create a little time, and you can get a quarterback to ad lib a little bit, that's when you can beat the Colts. And I think that's where we saw maybe Rodgers beat the Colts up a little bit in the first half.
I think that fits what we've seen this year. I think usually when teams start to get going offensively, it's when they're either the pass rush isn't getting there, or they're buying a little time, and it gives time for the receivers to clear and find and settle and. I think that's probably good analysis. I don't really, with the exception of maybe the Ravens, but I think that was play action too. Like I think a lot of it is more like extended plays down the field than it is just the quick hitting like slant stuff over the middle. That stuff usually gets beat up pretty good.
They do, and they do a good job of beating it up. And again, they play zone defense. There are going to be holes in it. But again, like great example of this is the cover 2 that we were in that Rock got the pick on Aaron Rodgers. It's like, not only do they play their cover 2, like do they play the responsibilities well, but they know it so well that when they recognize a quarterback is trying to fit that seam, you know, behind the flat corner and the deep safety in the cover 2, Rock was smart enough to go, I'm going back there. I'm going to make that interception myself. And again, like that's some of the things that the Colts do so well, is recognizing the concepts that are built to beat their cover 2. And so when Rodgers is able to move, I mean, again, we talk about like when the Jets had any level of success against the Colts, it was Sam Darnold booting out. When Baker had a really good first half against the Colts, he was moving around in the pocket quite a bit and creating after the play broke down. I think we've talked about this already on this podcast, but it is interesting to note that, like, I guess, especially coming up with this game with Tennessee, Tennessee is such an on-script team. Tannehill is like, it's either hand the ball off, play action, take your shot, and then if it doesn't work, he'll maybe scramble away. But it's not a lot. He doesn't do a lot of creating outside of the pocket, though he can. He just, that's not really part of their offense.
That hasn't been what they've done since he took over.
Right. And so I don't know. I'm interested to see, like, that. I think they're a particularly bad matchup for the Colts are a bad matchup for the Titans, I should say, particularly because of that.
Well, they're a bad matchup on both sides of the ball too, because, like, the way the Titans have played defense this year, number one, they don't play it well. Number two, they don't work. But the rushing the passer thing is obviously huge. If you can't rush Rivers, and I mean, Green Bay actually did a better job of rushing Rivers than I thought they would last week. Maybe that has to do with Ben Smith being out. Maybe they just had a good game. But I thought they were better than I expected in terms of getting pressure, and he was still really good. But if you can't get pressure on him, just give it up. And then the other thing is the way the Titans have been playing, I think in response to not being great in the pass rush, is they're pretty much just playing back and taking away the big play.
Yeah.
And Rivers is very content to just throw 8-yard to 15-yard completions on every down and just move all the way down the field. Like, it's hurt the Colts at times because then they end up in the red zone and they can't score. But they also sort of make up for it by just constantly, like, every drive gets down there into field goal territory, and they just keep adding points on. That's kind of what we saw in the second half against the Packers. Like, they had two field goal drives in there with the touchdown drive, and you'd like for all three of them to be touchdowns, but it all added up to a full comeback.
Right.
Because they just keep – there's just not a lot of – if a team is playing back and just letting stuff happen, they get first downs. The Colts get a lot of first downs.
I mean, I think one of the things that you – again, we've talked about this before. This is what's going to happen when you're 11 weeks into the season. But what has made Philip Rivers great in the moments that he's been great is that not only will he be happy to complete those 7 to 10-yard passes – over the middle or even to, you know, swing passes, he is so, like, I can't overestimate, like, under, like, you can't overstate how important it is, how elite the accuracy is when he hits a guy in stride or leads them up the field so they can create yards after the catch themselves. That is what, again, if you want to talk about where Philip Rivers is weak and or good or whatever, elite in this regard. Like, elite in terms of ball placement and where he's putting the ball.
Especially on some of those, like, short to intermediate routes. The ball.
Incredible.
There's like 4 or 5 times a game that the ball, it just goes to a spot that helps the receiver and helps the receiver get up the field. His placement is really, really good. One thing that's interesting to me with the Titans is, like, The numbers on running backs essentially historically over time are that eventually they're going to wear down, right?
Yeah, Derrick Henry is defying things.
Why doesn't Derrick Henry wear down?
He's not human. That was the book on him coming out of Alabama. It was like he's gotten too much work there. He's going to grind down, and then it just hasn't happened. They thought it was going to happen last year. He got like 400 touches.
His carries this season, game by game. 31, 25, 26, 19, 22, 20, 18, 21, 19, 28.
I know. He led
last year. The workload is insane.
Last year, he led the league in rushing attempts with 303, also chipped in 18 carries, so 320 touches. I mean, that's nuts. Right now, he's leading the league in carries again at 229 carries, not coincidentally leading the league in rushing at 1,079.
You'd almost assume that after playing the Ravens and having 28 carries that he'd be weaker this week a little bit. But he had 31 carries against Denver in the season opener and then had 25 carries for 84 yards against Jacksonville and 26 for 119 against Minnesota. So I don't
– Well, the thing is, like, he doesn't wear down. The defenses do. Like, look, the last play against the Ravens is the perfect play.
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point.
It's just like they got to overtime and they're just done tackling him. And again, not credit, because the Ravens are one of the best defenses and run stopping teams in football. And they were just done tackling him. They just couldn't do it anymore. And that he does that to teams week after week after week. Kevin Bowen, our colleague, asked Matt Eberflus that question. It's like, how do you prevent your defense from just being exhausted by the fourth quarter? And there's no good answer to that, because that's just what he does. You can't stop it. Like, you can't stop your defense from getting exhausted. You can try to change guys out, but like, Kari Willis, God bless that man. I mean, he took so many shots from Derrick Henry. There's no wonder. I can't believe he played the next week because of all the shots he took.
Well, and that's one of the ways you can see the effect he has. Like, some of the guys that ended up tackling him a lot, Kenny Moore, Kari Willis,
ribs, were both ribs. It was just all rib injury.
They need to do a better job against him of keeping him contained. When he bounces outside, Darius Leonard said this last time, it's just true.
Yep.
Like, he bounces stuff, that's where he gets yards against the Colts. It's not up the middle. It's when he bounces outside, and they did a really bad job the last time of sucking in too far and giving him the edge.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Xavier Rhodes needs to be better, because the Packers kind of
isolated him. We didn't talk about that. Good point. Get into that. What did you see against the Packers? I was trying to set you up. What did you see against the Packers that made you say that? Because I think you and I both noticed they were exploiting Xavier Rhodes in ways that you
the Packers like to get to the perimeter too. It's kind of a similar running game. Plus they have Aaron Jones, who's really good in space. And then they also like to throw a lot of quick passes. They sprinkle in a lot of screens and stuff, along with Rodgers taking shots down the field. I think part of that is just to keep Rodgers from going deep every play.
Yeah.
but on those plays, I think there were three or four times on Sunday that either Marquez Valdez-Scantling or Alan Lazard, and these are big guys, like the Packers only have big receivers essentially.
Right.
Just swallowed him and pushed him out of bounds, did whatever. And Rhodes has been pretty good as a tackler this year, but in terms of getting off blocks, it was bad last week. And I would assume the Titans are going to go at him that way.
I remember because like I said, you Packers background. I looked at you during the game and I went, is MVS like a great blocker? Is that like his thing? And I don't know. Actually, don't even remember what your answer was, but like,
he's not known for that. No,
he was destroying Xavier Rhodes. That's actually a good setup. Cause you know what I'm thinking now? One of the reasons Julian Blackman knew that screen was coming in overtime was because of how much success
they had. Because of which side it had gone. Yep.
And running it against Xavier Rhodes. So he probably was said, I'm not going to let this happen again. I'm going to split the blockers myself, and blew up the play. So again, I mean, I've written about it and all that stuff, but like the Julian Blackman, that play was so phenomenal in terms of just pre-snap recognition and then athleticism to knock the ball out. But like splitting the blockers, knowing the play was coming, it's incredible because you look back at the Bengals interception, and I wish I had written more about this in my story because I wrote about Blackman after the game. But Blackman, that was another one where Blackman was like, oh yeah, they were going to this particular route over the middle over and over and over again during that game. Burrow was.
In crunch time, he knew they'd go back to it.
And he jumped it. I mean, he actually abandoned a little bit where he was supposed to be to jump that route over the middle. He is just like, again, I tweeted this out earlier this week, but like one of my favorite pastimes is to go back and read scouting reports on guys and just kind of laugh at what some of the things they say. I mean, and Julian Blackman being one of them, scouting's super hard and you're going to miss, and only so much is put on tape. I get that. Like, I was horribly wrong on Justin Herbert. So it happens to everybody, but I don't have to publicly put my statements out when I'm doing scouting reports. However, there was some talk about him not having a lot of feel for the position, not being very instinctive. And not being a willing tackler was in one of them. And you saw what he did to Derrick Henry.
Wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait. Some scouting person said that Julian Blackman couldn't tackle?
There was problems with his tackling, yes.
His defensive coordinator, the teach tape for Utah football is just Julian Blackman.
I'm telling you. Some of the stuff is ridiculous. He told me
that person face-to-face, podcast listeners, like on the phone. He said, when I feel bad about football, I watch Julian Blackman tackling. And someone put in that tape and was like, yeah, I don't think he's good at it. Like,
yeah.
What?
I'm trying to find out. I can go back and look, but not to call out people individually. But
I mean, they should definitely call. Like,
oh, here we go. This is, again, only because Darius Leonard.
And Utah's good at defense. Utah's good at defense.
Darius Leonard loves calling out Bleacher Report, so I won't name the writer because I actually respect the writer quite a bit. But the first The second weakness under Julian Blackman's scouting report is weak tackler who didn't impress on tape coming downhill.
No, it doesn't fit with his defensive coordinator has been at Utah for years. Utah is usually better on defense than they are on offense. And he said Julian Blackman is the best tackler he's ever coached, and it's not close.
Here's the other one. Doesn't have the awareness and zone coverage to play right away. Oops.
Well, that one didn't
fit. What was it, like his second, like the first half against Minnesota where he ran from one side of the field to the other to tip the ball into Kari Willis's hands?
Yeah, that hasn't.
Pretty good zone awareness, I think. Like I said, it's one of my favorite pastimes is going back and reading some of these things. I'm like, what did you see? And again, some of the stuff they put on college tape, they're used in different ways. You have to make guesses a lot of the time. Scouting's super hard. And again, making public guesses is it's a very risky business. This is why Joel doesn't like making guesses on games, among the reasons, I should say. Because you put your thoughts out there and you're like, that could go really poorly.
And also, I'm never predicting a score again because I nailed last week. And so it's not happening.
Again, scouting reports, and Joel will be the first to tell you, I watched Justin Herbert and was like, oh, that's Mitch Trubisky. And I was, have you watched that guy? He's incredible. I've never been more wrong.
He's not Mitch Trubisky.
Well, it turns out I think he's Mitch with a brain. He is so good.
The brain, like we've talked about this before, like the brain is kind of the most important thing. The
100%.
Only that rule in the entire history, the entire last 30 years of the NFL is Brett Favre. It's the only one.
So here's the problem. It's like, when I want
Brett Favre somehow didn't need a brain. Every other quarterback does.
It looked like he didn't have a brain in college tape when I was watching, or at least as good a one as he's got, because I think they changed offensive schemes a couple times while he was there. He also graduated like his entire class of like his junior year to his senior year. They graduated like everybody, and I didn't realize what impact that was going to have on him. Like, again, there were reasons. I think there were things hiding the fact that he actually had a brain. He was just trying to adjust. So anyway, I watched the highlights of I watched Justin Herbert highlights last night I watched Justin Herbert highlights last night and I was just like, oh my God, this guy is incredible. One of the best deep balls in football already, by the way. Anyway, we got way off topic. How did we get to Justin Herbert in the draft? Oh, Julian Blackman.
Julian Blackman.
Yeah.
Julian Blackman. Somebody saying that
telling you.
I don't usually have anything to go against the draft analyst because I try not to get into it too much because I just don't have the time to really, really watch in terms of like when you have to cover a team during the offseason and have to cover all the roster moves and free agency and all that stuff, you don't really have time to watch all the tape. So I don't really do that. But I do, once players are picked, I do end up talking to their coaches a lot. And I've talked to Morgan Scali before from Utah for other stories about other players. He's been at Utah forever. Utah, if you watch college football, that's what they're known for, is defense.
Defensive backs. They're defensive back you right now.
And especially defensive backs.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is the one time that I'm like, okay, my reporting tells me that whatever the draft scout wrote was just terrible. That's just bad. Just bad scouting. Because he's his teach tape. That's the only, like, that's it. I don't know how many times in that interview with him, I went back and said, like, some version of, you know, what sticks out about Julian Blackman or what, and every time, tackling tape.
So
nobody tracks the near hip like he does and always makes the tackle. No one positions himself well enough.
It's hard. I hate award season because you get so isolated on your own team. I've tried to look around the league and see what other guys are doing. It's a lot of box score scouting, unfortunately. Obviously, there's some. I try to watch as many games as I can. Guys like Jeremy Chinn do stick out. Guys like Isaiah Simmons, he's played really well recently. Guys like Chase Young have been playing well since the beginning of the season. I still, given that, given the box score scouting, given what I've watched, I still think Julian Blackman probably belongs at or near, like at the top or very close to the top of the defensive rookie of the year conversation.
Well, I think one of the things that won't be taken into account by voters, but should, is that Blackman's position by nature is going to keep some of the counting stats away.
Right.
I think we've seen that over the last couple of years. And when the Colts play as much zone as they do and take away the big play as much as they do, it brings down some of the counting stats. Now he's got good counting stats. I mean,
well, he's like the problem is Chin's like doubled them or almost tripled them up on tackles.
Yeah, like he's not going to have the tackle numbers that other people are going to have. His passes defended and interceptions, he's got 2 and 6. Like usually it has to be super eye popping, and maybe he gets there in the back half of the season. But a lot of it is just like there's a lot of good stuff Julian Blackman does that doesn't result in a throw, a tackle, or a play on the ball.
Right.
And I think that's probably going to hurt him. But making a big play in a huge game like that, I think he's on everybody's radar now. And that means people are going to be watching him going forward, which is important.
As well they should. All right, real quick before we get into our other two topics, because we got to go a little quick. I was writing about rookies this year. It'll be coming out later this week about kind of this draft class. I was curious, do you feel like, okay, is it silly to start talking about this class in the way we look at 2018? Now, again, hear me out for 1 second. I think where you're going to lose it is in contributors.
The answer is yes, but keep going.
Well, I think, okay, so you have an offensive impact player. I'm starting to think that if Michael Pittman hadn't had compartment leg syndrome, the breakout would have happened 6 weeks ago.
The Colts said that.
I'm starting to think that again, like I'm not going to say he's going to be an all pro like Quentin Nelson, but the impact of a true number one receiver on an offense is probably greater than the impact of a star guard. Probably. Not saying it always is, but probably. And I will say this, the best part about that draft was to have that he got a franchise changing offensive player and a franchise changing defensive player. Pittman has the potential in my mind to be that player offensively. And Julian Blackman is starting to look an awful lot like Darius Leonard on defense, just at the back end. You disagree with either one of those things?
I mean, they look good, but I think we're projecting, whereas with Darius and, well, Julian Blackman, no. Julian Blackman's been great right from the start. Quentin was there right from the start. Just right. Good, bad.
I agree. Pittman isn't, but Pittman 10 catches, 160-something yards and a touchdown in the last 2 weeks. Like
I think it's a really, really good class. But, like, Quentin is widely – I mean, he's had trouble with holds this year, and I don't think he's been as good as he has been the last couple of years. But I think he's one of the two or three in football that people are like, okay, that guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So like you're talking like one of the top players of this position in football.
Right.
Blackman, I don't know. He's having that kind of safeties are weird. It's hard to gauge safeties.
I agree. He's
having that kind of year. I think the other thing though is you can make a case that Jonathan Taylor and Braden Smith are kind of analogous. They're, you know what I mean? Like maybe not playing fantastic football, but they've been very important and played key roles.
Yep. So you're starting to get there. You're starting to come along here. I don't think they're there yet. I agree with you on projectability. The other problem is the 18 class had a lot more top-end picks. Tyquan Lewis, Kamoko Ture are still in there. Naheem Hines, but he just had more picks hired up in the draft. So it's always going to be the better class that's got more. But if you look at the impact of the picks, I mean, again, you wrote about Isaiah Rodgers. You wrote about Jordan Glasgow. Like, even if you want to throw in like Rodrigo Blankenship as an undrafted guy, like that's a huge impact right now. The Jacob Eason thing is like, if he ends up becoming a franchise quarterback, this draft class wins. If he doesn't, don't worry about it. It's fine. It's fourth round.
Yeah, that's actually true. That's actually true. That's hanging out there is like, if they get an actual quarterback.
Oh, it's that class always 2020. If Jacob Eason's a real NFL quarterback that you can count on for 8 to 10 years, then this 2020 is better than 2018. But we're way far away from knowing that. And then the other one is Danny Pinter, who we haven't got to see a lot. There's some other ones in there, but like, again,
but he's their sixth. I mean, he's their interior backup. Like that's
he's the future at right guard. I would say, I think that's probably true. Yeah. I would guess that we're probably watching the last games of Mark Lewinsky's Colts career. Not to say he's played poorly. I just think that they have Danny Pinter as the backup plan there.
Well, he's under contract though, isn't he?
I thought this was the end of it.
No, it was a 3-year deal signed after the 18 season. So they
okay. But well, how much is actually guaranteed for this next year?
Well, yeah, but if you had like it's at a very low money deal, so I bet you keep him just to
I'm
keep
look
him
real quick. You're right.
It's how he beats him out.
6.5 million, or I'm sorry, 6.6 million next year. You're right. I'm sorry. For some reason, I thought it was that, but 1.4 in dead cap. So if they did want to cut him, they could, but I don't know that they will. That's a fair point.
Just because $6.5 million isn't going to hurt the Colts, and if you have four good interior offensive linemen, you don't get rid of one of them.
You're right. You don't have a problem with that. I agree. Nope. You're right about that. So, but still, like I said, I think this class has the potential to at least. I think it's already probably the second class in Ballard's. But again, like you're you want to give time on that, on all of this stuff. But just the way Pittman's played recently, just the way that Julian Blackman has played recently, it kind of reminds you of like offensive, defensive impact players on both sides of the ball, kind of like what happened in 18. Again, I think Pittman's got to do it for more than a couple games in a row. But I got to tell you, after watching him against Tennessee, after watching him against Baltimore even the week before, and then after watching him against Green Bay last week, I don't – that looks very sustainable to me.
Yeah, I think Michael Pittman's really good.
Okay. All right, let's move on to our other thing. You think Michael Pittman's really good. The rest of the NFL might not know because they never get to see him in primetime ever. Now his breakout game actually happened on a Thursday night. So to be fair, they did get to see that. But they never get to see it again, right? Because they're not playing in primetime anymore.
So this is the thing. Like, I know this is a big talking point among Colts fans. But I would say that, like, you and I are both kind of in the same spot where we're both big football fans who watch most games, like most primetime games. And really what I want out of a primetime game is just, I want two good teams that are like, I want the chance. And I will admit, sometimes I still watch if it's like Patriots Jets. I did, because the Jets almost won that game. And I wanted to see if they're going to go in 16 or not, but I wasn't excited about it. Whereas like, I would get excited about watching the Colts, even if I didn't cover them. Like, it's a good team with a good defense. They just proved they could knock off a team like Green Bay. I would watch them. And instead, like, there's been these games that are on that I'm like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
I might watch it, but I don't really care. Like, in 2 weeks, if they don't flex out of Broncos Chiefs, I'm not going to be excited about that.
I will, because I like watching Patrick Mahomes.
Because I just feel like it would be a Chiefs blowout. Maybe it doesn't end up being that way. And that's usually what happens when I don't like a game, is I'm like, oh, I'm not going to watch this. And then I like, it's like 5 minutes into the first quarter and the team that's bad has a lead. And I'm like, well, now I want to see if they get the upset. But the Colts, and the other thing I don't understand is, like, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to put them on TV. Phillip Rivers is wildly entertaining from the TV standpoint.
This is my problem. This is my problem going into the year. It's not the flex stuff now, which is an issue. I agree. But my problem going into the season was, this was like a pretty interesting team. They traded a first round pick for a star defensive player. That's huge. Then they signed one of the most like telegenic quarterbacks in terms of just entertainment purposes in Phillip Rivers.
Well, and if either you, the thing about Rivers is like, he elicits a reaction from people.
Right.
Either you like him and you like all the feistiness and the trash talk and all that stuff, or you hate him.
Right.
And both things are good for TV. They're both good.
He's perfect. Like I said, he's perfect.
Plus,
for TV.
I think, and you agree with me on this, I think that the Colts have more of a national following than a lot of teams because of the Peyton Manning years.
100%. They definitely do. We were just talking about this the other day with, like, when we went to Nashville, there were a ton of Colts fans there because I have a lot of wearing 18 jerseys.
This is wildly anecdotal, but I don't think I would say this about, like, the Jaguars or somebody. I have a friend from Texas who's – born and raised in Texas, lives in Texas, and he's a Colts fan because of Peyton Manning. Like, I think there's more of those people out there than maybe people realize.
Tons of them.
I think Peyton Manning put the Colts into a different tier franchise-wise in terms of, like, having fans elsewhere. And so I think they're going to draw if they're good. And even last year, like, that was a bad Colts team, but they still upset the Chiefs. That was a huge deal when it happened. They're good enough to beat people. Whereas, like, if you put the Giants on against the Steelers on Monday night in the opening week, like, what are you trying to do there?
What are the Colts?
Just let people watch their first survivor pick win in primetime.
Let me ask you this. I just pulled up a list of teams. I'm trying to think, like, in terms of having a national following of fans because of the Peyton Manning year, I'm just going to throw a number out there and say sixth or seventh would be. Okay, so you'd say national followings. I would say the Patriots, the Steelers,
Packers,
Bears,
Cowboys.
That's so. Now my question is, Raiders, 49ers.
I think both of them. Yeah.
Okay, but then probably the Colts, right?
Baltimore has some.
Now they're too new.
No, but like Baltimore, I think, has been in it so much. I think there's a lot of, like, Baltimore people like watching Baltimore.
I think the Colts are in the top 10, at least of that conversation of having national fans. No, I don't think – I'm trying to
no
think.
One, like, I don't think anybody – like, I think there's some, like, that used to be that don't anymore. No one cares about Washington anymore.
No.
Like, I think they used to. I think in the mid-90s, you cared what Washington was doing, even if they weren't that great.
Right.
No one cares at all anymore.
I don't know about the Raiders either. I wonder how much they have carried over from.
I think they might have fallen off too.
Yeah.
More than Niners. I think the Niners are good enough every couple of years that they keep those fans in.
Anyway, the point is the Colts probably deserve to be on primetime more often because they do have a national following. And again, they're good. They've been good for, I mean, they were good at in 2018. They were a playoff team, Cinderella comeback story team, which again, then they got, that's the thing too. Like last year, people were like, well, they weren't very good. Like, well, nobody knew they weren't going to have Andrew Luck. They were a playoff team. They were a playoff team that had Andrew Luck, who, by the way, was a national brand, was on a million commercials. And like, still, they weren't in primetime last year. They had what? Two primetime games. It was the Chiefs. And then was there a Titans or the Texans? Huh?
The Saints.
Oh, didn't they have a Texans night game?
Thursday.
Okay. So three.
Which I almost don't count. I almost don't count Thursday games because everyone has to play one.
That's fair. That's a good point. So yeah, you're right. So national. And again, like I will say this, like I do you count this last week for the against the Packers because they had the primetime like 4 o'clock slot?
No, because it's like there's another game on.
There is.
They were bad games, which probably helped their ratings. I think I wrote about that in the column. But like, there's other games on, like. It is a sign of respect that they move you to the 425 slot. Like, of course it is. But also, it doesn't really say anything about what the NFL and the networks think about the Colts because the other games were garbage. The other games had Vikings, Cowboys, Broncos, and who did the Broncos? Dolphins.
Broncos, Dolphins,
yeah. And then the other one was Jets, which,
yeah.
Like, those are, of course, they pick them as the 425 game. Course,
I'm just wondering, like, is it a flyover country thing? Is that what it is? Like, I mean, again, because the Bears and the Packers are like national brands. I think there's weird NFL interest in Cleveland for some reason. Like I think the Baker thing, and people are like, are they a train wreck? Are they not a train wreck? I don't know, but like.
The Titans Packers game was originally scheduled for Sunday night, and the Titans I think are a non-national fan base who are basically flyover country. Like, okay. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, that's what I'm wondering. Is it just like East and West Coast, networks planning East and
Kansas
West Coast
City teams? Kansas City was on TV even when Alex Smith was the quarterback.
Okay,
That's flyover country.
So you just think they hate the Colts irrationally?
I just don't understand it. I don't have a reason for it or whatever. And I'm sure like the NFL would be like, well, the blah, blah, blah ratings, blah, 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 interest, fan jersey sales, blah, blah, blah. I just don't get it. I don't get why you don't put them on like even just one more time a year. Like, why do I have to watch a Jets game on Monday night when the Colts are available?
I don't know.
No one knew the Jets were going to be garbage this year. Everyone.
Honestly, yeah, they're the Jets.
Honestly, they probably got lucky in that Monday night game by the fact that the Jets hadn't won a game yet. So there was like some interest in, hey, can they actually win a game?
Yeah. I guess there's that. I mean, yeah, I don't know. And again, there's the Jets, it's East Coast. I mean, you know, the New York people kind of care about it. And I've admitted to you, I think on the podcast.
I've never met a Jets fan in my life that wasn't from New York. Never.
No, that's probably true. I guess my point is I just like cheering against New York teams because of kind of what we're talking about. Like, it makes me happy that the Giants and Jets have won, what, like three games combined, and it's all the Giants.
You're not supposed to use personal experience, but like I've lived in six states. Like I've lived in a lot of different places with a lot of different fan loyalties, and to have never met like a Jets fan outside of it. Like, I don't think you can just be like, well, if we just get the New York market, you're fine. Like, the NFL is not going for that. They want the entire country.
Yeah, I don't know. They've had Manning, they had Luck. Those were both national brands. I just don't understand why it didn't really carry over for the Colts like it probably should have. And again, they've been continually interesting. Again, they've had some down seasons, and they weren't that interesting last year. But again, no one knew that going in. They were supposed to be interesting. So.
And I have met, you know, like I have the one friend, but I've met other people who are Colts fans who don't have a geographical reason to be Colts fans.
Yeah, Well, that's, like I said, that's kind of a weird thing. We'll see what happens. I will tell you this, when they announced the, was it week 15 Saturday games, I was quite disappointed. One, those are actual primetime slots, like two or three of them you could, you know, Saturday right, by themselves. And as like a, like, oh, that would be, and then as a, like, selfishly, I was like, oh, covering a Saturday game, I can go back home and watch games on Sunday. That'd be great. But we didn't get that, unfortunately. So sad. Continued sadness. I want to see.
We gotta go quick on our last thing, so I gotta get going.
All right, Thanksgiving. I'm just gonna, like you said, we're talking about bad games that are in primetime slots. That's a perfect segue into this. What do we got, Joel, for Thanksgiving games that everybody has to look forward to?
Lions versus Texans. Which also, this is my Thanksgiving Day hot take, is that the Lions should be playing the Vikings, Bears, or Packers on Thanksgiving. They should never play outside of the division, ever.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
The Cowboys get weird with the Cowboys game. That's fine. Like, I'm fine with the Cowboys game.
But Thanksgiving is supposed to be
playing. The Lions should be playing an NFC North team.
Thanksgiving. Okay, let me just say this. Thanksgiving is supposed to be a nice time, and subjecting people to Lions Bears would just be like cruel and unusual punishment.
I know, but it's also like a lot of my childhood memories are like a bad Lions Bears game turning into something super entertaining because of Barry.
Yeah. That's all you were looking forward to. Even as like a Bears fan, you were watching going, oh, when's Barry going to like do his thing? Because that's the only thing I care about here. I can't.
Well, like a lot of my Thanksgiving memories are just like the Lions have the ball on the 40 going into the half. Instead of throwing a Hail Mary, they run a draw and Barry almost gets it.
I just don't think people want to watch like 10-3 Lions Bears. As people remember, I think last week the Lions scored 0 points. I know they didn't have Kenny Galladay or DeAndre Swift, but they had Matthew Stafford playing with a hurt thumb. Scored 0 points. The Bears' offense is a train wreck. I'm glad we don't have to subject ourselves to that. At least you get to watch Deshaun Watson, who we talked about at the beginning of this podcast as having actually a really, really good season. So there is that. The night game, though, is the other problem. Like, it should have – like, Steelers-Ravens – a couple weeks ago, maybe even like 3 or 4 weeks ago, you were like, yeah, this is going to be great. Steelers, Ravens, that's the night game that I want to watch, like the game I can't wait to watch. And the Ravens just lost a bunch of games in a row, and they don't look very good offensively. And Steelers are running away with that division. And also the Ravens have COVID running rampant throughout their organization. And I don't know like what amount of Ravens will show up for that game. I'm not looking forward to that game as much as I thought I would be.
Well, and also, like, for some reason, Thanksgiving is, like, the one time that prime time is, like, not when you want to watch football because you're half asleep already.
Yeah, just put it on a little earlier. Actually, you know what? Thanksgiving football should start at, like, 10 a.m. and then do, like, don't give me, like, 1-4-7. Give me, like, 10-1-4.
That's perfect. Because, like, usually you're trying to eat at, like, 1 or 2. So you're, and stuff. Like, I want to have it on while like the games, like, instead of, you know what I mean? I mean, everyone's got the Thanksgiving Day parade or whatever, but like, you know, you're bored with that by that point.
Parades suck, Joel. Like, just all parades. They're the worst.
You've never been to the only good parades are the Super Cruise in New Orleans during Mardi Gras. That one's good.
For how long?
It's fun the whole time. It just is.
I've never been to a parade I enjoyed.
If you went to Endymion or Orpheus, you would have a good time.
I can't believe you just did this. You made me like curmudgeon Jim come right back out because you brought up parades. I really do. I
generally am not a fan of parades either, and that's why I know that like the super big with the light up ones and the incredible floats and stuff, like the ones in New Orleans are legit because I had a good time going to that, and I don't really like parades either.
I've seen one good parade. It was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and even that got boring after like 4 minutes. People were like, "Okay, he sang his song. Now we can go home." Like No.
Like, very seriously, if you need to go to Carnival Weekend in New Orleans at some point in your life, and just go to those parades, and you'll have fun.
Didn't I miss that that the day I became a father? Didn't I miss that moment in my life? Like, that's not going to happen, right?
No. See, that's the misconception. It's that like everything is like the Bourbon Street version. You don't go to Bourbon Street. Like,
okay,
those parades are actually for everybody. Like, a little bit out of downtown along the parade route, and your kids go, and they get, especially if you have small kids, they get 70 toys, and they all light up, and they're all going to break in a week, but like, thinks they're great.
I remember I was in Disney World as a child, and like, you know, I was like first or second grade, I think, I can't remember, but they did like, you go into Disney and like at night they have the parade with the fireworks. Hard pass. Even as like a first or second grader, I was out.
I have never been to Disney.
I don't remember. I remember liking it as a kid. I'm not like antsy to go back.
I've never been to Disney. We're not going to take the kids until they're like 10 because I want to make sure they remember it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to spend a lot of money doing it. So you want to make sure they remember.
And I'm also not really a go back to the same place twice person unless it's Colorado.
I agree with you on this.
For vacations.
Like, there are like vacation people are very interesting. Like some people are like that. And I'm with you. I like going to different places every time. But some people are like, I'm going to this one like resort that I've been to 100 times because I love it. And I'm fine with that. Not what I want to do. But I know people that go back to like the same like island, like Hawaii in Hawaii, the same resort in Hawaii, like all the time.
I want to see something different every time.
Me too.
The big world. Like, I don't want to have to see the same thing, but I get that other people, like, I get it. I especially get it if it's like a family thing, like you have like a condo on the beach or something and you have there because like it's free, you know, or it's cheap or something like that. And you can get like a really great vacation out of it. I get that. But I'm going to spend money on one place one time.
Yeah.
And then the next time I'm going to go somewhere else, with the exception of Colorado.
This is like a cruise thing though. Like people go on cruises a lot. I'm like, isn't it kind of the same experience every time? But I don't, like, I've never been on a cruise.
I'm not going on a cruise because the ocean is terrifying.
Are you scared of the ocean?
Yes, 100%.
I didn't know this.
You have to respect the sea.
I respect it. I'm not scared of it.
You're not respecting it enough then.
Are you like a don't want to swim in the ocean type of guy? Or how far does the fear go?
I will swim in the ocean.
Like 4 feet out?
I don't really go out much past like the water being above my belly.
Really? You've crossed the line. There's a line, Joel, of respect and fear, and you've crossed it into fear.
Everything in the ocean can kill you. Everything.
Yes.
Everything.
But you're going to like get in your car and drive to the Colts facility in a minute and that'll kill you too. Like it can.
Yeah. But like if that happens, most of the time in a car, like you can sort of see it coming. Like in the ocean, like the ocean just decides to have a riptide and you get sucked 30 miles and you die that way. And there's no way to know. It just decided to have a riptide that day.
You're the kind of guy, this is like an old, Mulaney joke, but you're the kind of guy who grew up, you're still looking for quicksand at every corner right now. Like you're just like, well, I don't know. I can get sucked into a quicksand hole and it's going to be bad. When in fact,
no, this happens.
There is no quicksand.
This stuff happens at the ocean all the time. People get sucked into riptides. Like there's animals. People get stung by jellyfish. Like the ocean is terrifying. Also, how many times in the last 10 years, have you like been aware of cruise ships for a good reason?
Almost never. Almost never.
Exactly. It's always like the motor went out and everybody had to poop on their bed for 3 days. Like,
I think the success rate of cruise rates is higher than you hear about. Like, I don't think you, like, do you go study that, like, oh, that plane, it took off from Atlanta, landed in Chicago very successfully. You got to write that one down. Like, I don't think you hear about the good ones, Joel.
The ocean is terrifying. It's incredibly powerful.
All right. Well, no cruises for you. And I agree with you generally.
I have told my wife this over and over again. I will go on one cruise in my life. And you have to promise me that there's a possibility I will see whales, like legit whales. And if I don't see whales, I will be very disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, seeing whales, seeing dolphins, that's like a good part of it.
You don't have to get on a cruise to see a dolphin. I've seen dolphins.
I don't think you have to get on a cruise to see whales either, but.
Well, then I might not get on a cruise.
I won't tell your wife. Does your wife want to go on a cruise? Because otherwise I'll start lying to you.
Not really. But humpback whales? Can I see humpback whales from like.
I don't know.
The one I really want to see.
I don't know. I'm not this level of expert. You got to call into like the Dan Le Batard show when you have the zoologist on like every week.
But the terror, the sheer terror of being on the cruise in the time leading up to the humpback and then after the humpback, like as soon as the humpback was over, I'd be like, so where's land? Where's land?
You've flown to Europe, right? To cover a Saints game? Were you terrified the entire time flying over the ocean?
No, planes don't bother me for some reason.
Yeah, but the ocean below, you know, not great.
Well, the idea of going down in the ocean is terrifying, yes. Yes.
Okay.
I've read several books too about like survival stories in the ocean. It did not help.
I see. You're the one who's like read the stories because you're afraid of it. Like here's the thing for me. I know I'm gonna die if that happens. Like I'm not surviving. I'm not that. I can't figure that out.
Like
so it's over.
In the Heart of the Sea, which is about a whaling ship that got like the survivors got cast adrift for like 45 days.
Yeah.
That one, the Louis Zamperini book.
Why do you read these things about your fears? I don't understand.
I really like survival stories. I really like survival stories. And for some reason, the ocean ones terrify me more than other ones.
Yeah. See,
There's a really good novel called Before the Fall where he goes down in a plane and has to swim to shore. And I know I wouldn't make it. So like that was terrifying.
I as Joel knows, if I don't eat every like 2 or 3 hours, I get it's bad. So I would not make it in one of those. I'd be the first one killed because I'd be whining quite a bit. And so
they would eat you.
Yeah. I would totally understand. That's not my game. I'm not an outdoor guy. Like I like being outdoors, but I'm not good at it.
We didn't plan to take this left turn, but it's a good one. Like friends of mine know that I don't have many stronger feelings than the ocean terrifies me.
Okay.
Really big one.
I'm not scared. Like I said, I'm not scared of it because I just know I'll die. Like I guess I've accepted the fact that something bad happened in the ocean. I'm not that strong a swimmer.
The Perfect Storm is like the worst horror movie I've ever seen. Mark Wahlberg just ends up adrift on the ocean. We don't know how that ends.
No, he died. They all died.
Well, we know that part. We don't know how long it took. Oh. We don't know how he
Have you died. Read that? Have you not read that short story, that book?
No.
It's the guy, I can't remember the name of the author. It's a very famous journalist, but he actually, I swear to God, he describes in like graphic detail what drowning feels like. It is among the most chilling things I've ever read in my life.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. Like the book, reading the book.
I've read stuff about drowning before too. And that definitely contributes to the fear of the ocean. Definitely.
Yeah. I can't remember. I got to read it. Who wrote The Perfect Storm? Is it a book or is it just a short story? I can't remember.
Also, has anyone ever noticed that the further you get out into the ocean, the more terrifying things look? That's a sign. Like,
I'm trying to remember.
Scary things on land are like sort of like beautiful and cute. Like tigers are dangerous, but they're like, you know, these gorgeous animals. Like a squid is just ugly, disgusting, terrifyingness.
Wait, what is?
A squid, like a giant squid.
Oh, I got no problem with squid. Shark. Sebastian Younger, by the way, that's who this is.
Nothing about a shark makes you want to like pet it.
No. Sharks are cool, though. You like sharks. Don't you like sharks?
They are cool, but they're also terrifying.
They don't like sleep. It's insane.
Yeah, they're just mindless eating machines.
I know. It's amazing.
They're a little bit like you. You're kind of a shark.
I would come at you for the mindless thing, but as I've forgotten my points and questions the last 2 weeks, I can't say anything. So
I know. I brought it full circle.
Really great. Mindless eating. I mean, if you want to start calling me the shark, that's a great nickname. I'd wear the leather jacket and, you know, start snapping.
You've got enough hair up there to slick it back too.
There you go. See, I could do the whole shark thing. I don't know if people would fear me in the way that they fear sharks though. I don't think I have that presence. I don't think they'd get the reference is really a mindless eater, but like,
Well, I'm around you all the time, and I'm not terrified of you, and I'm very terrified of the ocean. So
there you go. So not a shark. I don't know. We'll see.
I have a healthy. I have the proper amount of respect for the ocean. Most people are like, "Oh, it's just the ocean. It's fun." No, it's powerful and terrifying, and it's way bigger than any of us.
I just know. Yeah, that's what, for me. It's like I know my limits, and it's like don't mess with it. But like I said, I think I'm smart enough to know it'll kill me. So that's why I'm not that scared of it.
It's not. That's the thing. I know it'll kill me. It's the fact that it's going to take forever for me to die.
Yeah, drowning doesn't seem like a good way to go out. I'm going to try to avoid that. Like I said, not a strong swimmer, so I avoid water most of the time anyway. But again, which also, by the way, does not fit in your little shark narrative. They're pretty good swimmers. So, sorry.
That joke was perfect, and I'm just...
You're right. It was great. All right, we've lost the thread of everything. Bad Thanksgiving. Games. Yeah, there's not good games. So sorry, guys. You're gonna have to enjoy your Zoom families instead of watching good football games. You know, if I may suggest a one way to enhance. Again, this is not something I particularly partake in. One way to enhance bad football games is to gamble on them. That's all I'm gonna say. In my past, that has been a way to enjoy bad football games. Because
you also, if you play fantasy football, I'm sure you have somebody going tomorrow.
That's true. You're right. You have fantasy football. To be fair, that's a form of gambling, and that is more what I was referring to. And
that's true. Most there's very few people who are like, oh, I just play for fun.
Yeah. No, exactly. So, but yeah, make yourself again. It doesn't have to be like formal. Gamble with your family. I think the Houston Texans might score more than 4 points today, something like that, or Detroit. So yeah, anyway, enjoy the games. Everyone have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for listening. And yeah, we'll talk to you on Sunday after one of the biggest Colts games of the year.